I am Rachel.
And I'm Nicole.
Welcome to the Movement Toward Change podcast. We are using dance as a means to cultivate community and start conversation.
Today, we're honored to speak with Shannon Lee Jones. Shannon is an Alexander Technique teacher based in Boston, Massachusetts. She's currently an assistant professor of dance at the Boston Conservatory at Berkeley, teaching Alexander Technique. She received her teacher certification with Tommy Thompson at the Alexander Technique Center in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Alexander Technique International. Prior to moving to Boston, Shannon worked as a professional actress both on Broadway and touring nationally. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Yes, thank you for having me, ladies. I appreciate it.
Awesome. So could you tell us a bit about your journey to this point and if a specific event has shaped your career?
Okay. So let's see. Well, I was born in Winter Haven, Florida, which is in central Florida, right between Lakeland and Tampa. And right before my senior year, my mother was a single parent. She moved us to Atlanta so I could go to a performing arts high school. So anyway, I had the opportunity to go to this performing arts high school, which coming from a small town and moving to Atlanta, which was a big city to me at the time, changed my life dramatically. I would get the opportunity to go to New York City my senior year twice, and we would perform up at the LaGuardia High School up there at their performing arts high school, and see Broadway shows and have that whole New York experience. So that, I would say that was the biggest event that would change my life, because it just took me out of my hometown and opened my eyes and just woke me up. And so I just was blown away, you know, at Broadway and New York City. It just seemed like everything was happening, you know, 24 hours a day, you know, there was something happening. So I moved to New York right out of high school. And I thought, okay, I'll just go up there and I'll give it a try. I'll probably go back home, but I'll go try it, you know? And so I didn't. I ended up staying there for 23 years and pursued musical theater and did national tours and Broadway, off Broadway and all that good stuff and regional theater. And I would do a chorus line. And I actually saw that when I went to New York. That was running at the time, the original show. And I would do a European tour that was out of New York City. And I played the role of Cassie. And that was kind of, that was a dream come true for me. So the way it works with Chorus Line is that once you do the show, they, you get a reputation for knowing the show, because it's a very hard show to learn. And with regional theater, you have such a short window of time with rehearsals. So I would get, after I got off of being on the road, I would get called to come in and to audition and to do the show regionally all over the country. So I did it on and off for a long time. I would say probably altogether about 5 years on and off. And so what started to happen though, is I started to develop pain and I had some injuries I did La Cage aux Folles on Broadway for 2 years. And so I had some injuries from that show. And so what started to happen was those injuries started to kind of catch up with me. And I started to have like a domino effect of, you know, it first started in my SI joint, which is in the back of the hip where the sacrum is. And then it moved down to my knees. And then it would come back up to my hip joint. And so I would get injuries and I'd have to leave the show. And it was a very challenging time because I would, you know, go get PT with the best physical therapist in New York who worked with dancers. I would do Pilates, I'd get acupuncture, I'd get massage. I would do all these things to keep myself strong and flexible. And yet I would go back out and I would injure myself. And so I thought, my goodness, what is going on here? And I was in my, by this time when it started to really get bad, I was in my late 30s and I thought, wow, I'm at that place now. Well, what do I do when I can't dance anymore? That's a line in Chorus Line, if you've ever seen Chorus Line. And I found out that I had two herniated discs in the lower part of my spine, in the L5 and L4, and that's very painful. It was pushing on my spinal cord. And so I went to a back surgeon at Mount Sinai, and she said that I should try the Alexander technique. And I was like, okay, I'll try anything, because I just was having so much pain and was feeling very helpless. So I found myself a teacher, and that began my journey with the Alexander technique. But it would take me some time because I had gotten into these very strong patterns of the way I danced. And that's how I was taught and brought up at that time. And so it would take me time to get out of that chronic pain that I had been experiencing for some time. It would take me, about a good 4 years. And then what happened was my husband got a job opportunity up here in Boston. And he also is an actor, but he was juggling and running, working for this other company. And so when he got this opportunity to work up here, we thought, okay, you know what, why don't we go check out Boston? You know, we've both been in New York for a long time, and we thought, and I told him, I said, okay, I'll go to Boston if you'll put me through school to be an Alexander technique teacher. So that was our deal. And so here we are. that was back in 2005. So here we are.
Nice.
Oh, that's such a great story.
Oh, thank you. I hope it's so crazy when thinking about it, you know, because it just sends you down. You're like, oh my gosh, I haven't thought about it in so long. It seems like it was a lifetime ago. It's a really long time ago. But yet when you start thinking about it, like when I start thinking about all the injuries and just the pain that I went through, it can come back very quickly, you know.
Right. So kind of backtracking a little bit, what exactly is the Alexander technique, and how does that technique help to improve a dancer's well-being and prevent injured dancers such as yourself?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Alexander technique is a re-education of the body mind, and what it does is you learn to recognize patterns, habits that are interfering with your ability to move and think. And at the same time, you learn how you're designed so that you can use yourself and dance, or move efficiently and effectively. So it's recognizing, getting to learn what those patterns are. And then, but we do this with curiosity. We're taught to, because it's very easy to become very critical of yourself. So you don't want to go down that road of being critical, not at all. You want to look at it with curiosity. My teacher, Debbie Adams, would always say, well, isn't that interesting? Do you know? And I'd be like, really? And she would be like, yes. You know, she would always find find it very interesting, and she would also bring a lot of love into the room when she was teaching. She was also one of my teachers. She runs the teacher training program at the conservatory. One of the things that the technique does is that it helps to calm down the nervous system. And because if the nervous system is revved up, it's hard to take care of yourself. You know, you're gonna just kind of keep doing what you know. And it's hard to take time out to listen to your body and just get tuned in and go, okay, what's going on here? Learning to calm the nervous system, which quite a few of the tools do, just helps you, teaches you to be in the present and not to get so ahead of yourself, if that makes sense. As an example for dancers, this one particular tool they call end gaining, where it's, we think about, you know, okay, I'm going to do that leg extension, but I'm going to get it all the way up here, you know, up by the head, you know? And so instead of just being in the process of like, okay, I'm going to take a moment and feel the floor, and I'm going to start in first position, and I'm going to have a sense of where I am in space. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to just sense how my foot is moving into a coupe as I bring it up to a passe. And then as I start, so being in the process of getting there, it just calms the nervous system down when we can begin to slow things down and give yourself the permission. Okay, I'm here to really be present with what I'm doing, and I'm going to see if I can put a pause on that thought where my leg wants to get there, you know, extended right by my ear. That's one of the tools that we learn in the Alexander work, and that takes time, you know, because it's hard to break that thinking pattern of, okay, I'm gonna go out to second and prep for a pirouette, and I'm gonna get, you know, get my doubles. You're already at the end of your double pirouette before you've even started your prep, you know, in your thinking. So there's ways of doing that, like just bringing your attention out to the space, using your sensory motor skills, sensing where you are in space, and you know what's behind you and what's above you, and so we just slow everything down so that we can start to reprogram the brain, and it takes time.
So in what ways can the Alexander technique help to improve performance and dance technique?
Very much what I just talked about. You know, learning to be, when we can learn to be present, that can definitely help with your anxiousness about performing. There's tools for that. And that has a lot to do with you're using your senses again, like just when you being in the room and sensing, you know, the space that you're in relationship with your space, right? And if you're in the dressing room, just taking a moment before you walk up for performance, just to get a little grounded and embodied, just taking, sensing your feet and sensing your body as a whole, and perhaps noticing your breathing, you know, because when we get nervous, we get a little, the breathing, our breath may get a little short, a little quick. And so you can just take a moment to tap in with your breathing. And it's not about trying to push the nerves away. I mean, being nervous is all part of the journey of performing, right? So simply acknowledging, okay, it's very human, right? We all get a little nervous when we have to perform. I've been doing it for a long time and I still get a little nervous. But just taking some time to just get grounded, that's one way. You can use the Alexander technique tools and just sensing, you know, what's going on around you. You may hear the music if you're doing, if there's an overture, if you're doing a musical theater piece, or and just allowing that information to just kind of come in, but staying present. Again, it there are tools that really help you to learn to be present. And then, you know, just as you take your time to get to the stage, taking a moment to land, taking time to land in the space, I think is really important. And just sensing the space and sensing where the audience is and knowing that that's a relationship that you have with the audience, right? And so not only do you have a relationship with the audience, but you have a relationship with the crew who are running, you know, your stage manager and the music, if there's an orchestra, and then with your fellow performers, you have a relationship with them. So just taking a little bit of time to recognize that it's all a relationship, you know, and a partnership, and when you tap into that, it helps many times to calm the nervous system down, because it just helps you to be present. It sounds so simple, and it is, and we're just, you know, as human beings, we're designed to be in relationship, you know, to be connected. We really are, and that's the beauty about performing, you know. So when you just take a moment to sense your body and yourself, you can move into that and be more accepting of performing. And then what was the other thing that and how does it help to improve technique? Yeah. So, we talked about the whole end gaining thing, which is a big help, but we do a lot of body mapping. You may have done some of that, Rachel, and you had mentioned, we were talking about earlier, your Feldenkrais class. In the beginning of Alexander, we start to understand the skeleton. And so I'll just give you an example. So we have, you know, the arm, and there's the sternoclavicular joint, which is attached right to the sternum, which is right there in the middle of your chest. So your clavicle bone it's like a lever, you know? And so it has the shoulder blade, that big bone in the back there, hooks into the clavicle. And so the clavicle lifts the shoulder blade and it takes it along for a ride. You know, and then it can glide along the rib cage as you bring the arm in front, and then it's, you take it back, so we do a lot of body mapping, feeling how that shoulder blade moves along the ribs. And when we start to understand that, oh, wow, I can take my arm up, you know, up towards my head, I can move it up and do it from the sternoclavicular joint here, you can get more freedom. You know, a lot of folks in general think that their arm just goes out to the shoulder and that's where you move the arm, but it doesn't. It starts from the clavicle joint, and that shoulder blade just goes along for the ride. So that's one example of body mapping. So we do a lot of body mapping, understanding how the head sits on top of the spine, and that the hips, the pelvis, we do a lot of work with the pelvis. the whole torso, and then the limbs just work off of the torso. So that can definitely help with technique, so that you can, and go, and it also ties into preventing injury, if that makes sense. You know, just understanding the body mapping of your skeleton, which is your foundation. So that's, yeah.
That makes sense. Like if we're practicing with more awareness, we're less likely to injure ourselves because we're not just throwing our body into positions, trying to hit the shape that the teacher's making, but really kind of like becoming aware of how our body's getting into the shape. So it's moving in a safe way for us.
Yes. Yes, okay. Absolutely. Yep. And you know, there's another thing that, that ties in with for the dancers of what they learn is it's not about getting rid of tension. Mm-hmm. We need tension, you know, inside our bodies. We with the fascia bag, your bodysuit, it needs tension to keep things in place. I mean, your organs move around, but if we didn't have tension, everything would just kind of be all over the place, right? So you need tension. So in Alexander, we learn to distribute the tension. We learn to recognize those patterns where we may have a lot of tension, you know, like say in the ribs, or where how the head sits on top of the spine or down at your hip flexors. But we learn to like, oh wow, I've got a lot of tension here in my hips and my hip joints. What happens if I can I move some of that tension on up and free it up so that we distribute? And that's another thing that really helps with injury when the dancers start to understand that and can be a lot of fun to distribute tension, you know?
So I know we already touched upon this a little bit, but in what ways does the technique utilize the mind-body connection?
Well, I think like most mind-body techniques, learning to just calm down that nervous system, which we were talking about, and and the other thing, learning to work from where you are. That's where I was, you know, not trying to be someplace where you're not, you know. And I think that's what like a lot of mind body techniques do. It helps you to listen to your body and go, okay, this is where I am today. And or right now, this moment, I'm really tired. I've had a full day. You know, if you're going to like say a yoga class or a Feldenkrais class, I mean, you work from where you are, and interesting enough, when we start to do that, we get energized by it, you know. I have the sophomores, I have them for two semesters, and I get them late in the day, and they are exhausted. And they come in, and they're just like on the floor. And so, you know, I'll go, okay, let's just start. We'll start out on the floor. And so then, but we'll gradually start to move. It's like a lot of other mind body techniques. We don't try to force, we just work from where we are. And it's interesting enough. You just learn to listen to your body. And if you are dealing with an injury, then you'll learn to nurture that injury and not push it. You know, I think that's where it's where all these mind-body techniques really teach us to learn and to listen, you know, to what our body is, what's going on.
No, I know we've talked a lot about this on the podcast, but just a lot of dancers have been taught to just kind of push through and do as much as they possibly can at once, but it seems so much healthier to think about where you are in this moment now and what you can do.
Yes.
Body right now.
Yeah, it's true. We are so taught to push. And you know, when the dancers first come to take the Alexander technique, they like that. They a lot of them like to push. And so you can push if you want, but it's really, but there are going to be days that you're not going to feel like it. So just, you know, listening to that and just working from where you are, you know, like maybe they have that permission and their Alexander technique class. But yes, it's true. Dancers like to, you know, we like to push. We like, it makes us feel strong. And we certainly can do that, but we want to feel like we're in control. You know, we want to feel like we can control it and own it and embody it. You know, we just don't want to feel like we're flailing. That's not a good place to dance from.
Definitely. And are there similarities between Alexander technique and other somatic practices such as Feldenkrais and yoga?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think as I had mentioned, or maybe before we started taping. Yeah. So Feldenkrais did study with Alexander and was very much influenced by the Alexander technique. So yes, there's a lot of similarities with the Feldenkrais work. You move the awareness through it's awareness through movement, and so you do a lot of movement. But the similarities that I like is that you really slow down. So it's slowing down and listening, you know, to your body and just you know, you usually start out on the floor with the Feldenkrais work and yoga as well, and so you get a lot of that. It just like with Alexander, you get a lot of feedback from the floor, and so taking that information in, sensing your weight, so just learning to slow down and listen, I think that's very similar with Feldenkrais and yoga.
Yeah, definitely. How does the method help guide dancers to understanding harmful or inefficient movement patterns? Is there certain like kind of cues in which they might realize, oh, you know, I'm lifting my leg in a way that's causing me to grip my hip flexor instead of, you know, lifting the leg in a safe manner?
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we do in the technique is that if we, many times as with an exercise, I may say, okay, let's play with, you know, with leg extension. So perhaps we play with an arabesque and note. So go ahead and do your arabesque and maybe they work in pairs and just notice the places where you kind of get, where it hurts or you feel tight or stiff, and just again notice with curiosity, try not to judge it, and then, you know, we'll go back and we'll say, okay, let's just pause and imagine yourself doing the arabesque and without doing it, and then so that simple pausing and just having that taking a moment to visualize your arabesque and what you would like it to feel, interesting enough, the body will take that information and can organize to help. So again, it's that when we slow down, and so a cue that we may use is pause. Let's just pause and take a moment to have the thought of what you're going to do. And your body is so smart. This is the mind-body connection. The body, interesting enough, will organize. And you might say, to get them out of their head to think about it, you may say, how about we think of that arabesque as a big smile, like coming from underneath your torso, you know? And interesting, and it always blows the dancers away when we start to do this. their arabesque will feel better, and they usually get more length and even some width, like within the pelvis, so that there's less pinching in the back, you know, because they're thinking of their smile from coming underneath. And so their attention is out of what, you know, oh my, you know, the places where they feel like they get a little pinched, you know, usually it's the lower back. And so, you know, we'll give certain cues to how to think about it. But the pausing is a big one, because when we pause, we're inhibiting how we normally do it. You know, and so you'll get, and so what the pause does is it just allows you to get grounded and take in more information instead of going ahead and just getting to it. So that's a pause is a cue, giving them another way to think about it, so that they direct their energy a little differently and they're less in their head. Because, you know, it's interesting, the body, like when you have something that's painful, your attention is going to, that hurts, you know, like say you have a pinch in your hip and from double paying your leg out to the second, your attention's always gonna go there before, as soon as you hear the teacher, you know, you're at ballet bar and they you're about ready to go into, as soon as you know it's coming, you've already ignited that that connection there. There's already been a signal. And so you're gonna be really tight. So recognizing those patterns, and again, we do that, you know, with a lot of love, and then just finding other information. Like, is there another way to think about this? Many times there is.
Wow. That's so interesting. Like something like an arabesque, you can think about doing it and then it feels different.
Yeah. It's really quite amazing.
I'm gonna try that today.
Wow. Yeah. Like just think of that smile coming from underneath here. Like it's just like, oh, I'm gonna smile with my arabesque. It'll feel a little, try it, do your arabesque the way you normally do, and then try it with thinking of it as a smile and just see what's different about it. And take the time. And the other thing, which what they do in Feldenkrais, is when you slow it down and you recognize the changes, then the brain gets it, the body gets it. It's like, oh, wow, I can do this. I can do this differently. Like I can have some space in the hip joint here, you know?
And then I'm assuming your body then slowly remembers it in the way that actually feels good for the body, not the painful way.
Yes. Yes, okay. And that takes a little bit of time, you know, to break that habit. Mm. But that's what we do. We do. We take it slowly and not be so tough on ourselves. Mm. It's a process, right? It's a process.
So what does a typical Alexander technique class look like? Is it typically done individually or in a group setting? And what's the format?
Yeah, so it can be done both. For classes, many times you may do constructive rest, which is fantastic, which is great. And you may do, from constructive rest, you may do some restorative movement and some investigation, you know, of say your pelvis and all the different ways the pelvis can move, all the different ways the rib cage can move when you're down on the floor. The floor is just great for feedback. So the feet, so we do a lot of work with the feet, group work. I have a lot of props. I love a prop. And so I have these wonderful spiky balls. And so we'll have prop day in our group classes. And then we do lots of exercises. And sometimes they're movement, improvising, playing with rhythms, and then many times I try to shake it up, because as I mentioned, I have the sophomores and then I have my advanced class, and that's like a whole nother class. And that's a very different kind of class because I have them earlier in the day. We'll play games sometimes and bring in the tools just so that, because by the time I get them, there's the last thing they'll be like is, oh, please don't make me dance, you know. They've been dancing, you know, since 8 o'clock in the morning. And so sometimes we'll do voice work, voice exercises, you know, just playing with sound and freeing up the jaw and getting, doing a lot of breath work. We do lots of breath work. So a class work, lots of group stuff, lots of exploring, you know, through our own bodies. Sometimes we'll, you know, also working with weight. That's another thing we do, taking weight, distributing your weight. If you're going to be lifted up, how you can help your partner. That's the group class. Now, individually, yes, you can go study with an Alexander Technique teacher and address, usually people who look for an Alexander Technique teacher is because they're having some kind of pain, you know, and they want to address that pain and figure out what's going on and what they can do to help themselves. So, you know, an Alexander, we call it a lesson. We don't call, it's not, although sometimes you can also do table work and get on a table, and an Alexander Technique teacher can unwind you, but we always call it a lesson because it's about learning. It's not about being a practitioner fixing you. We're very clear about that. That's the difference from, you know, a massage therapist. So individually, yes, you can go and work with a teacher privately, and you can do the table work, which is great and amazing. If you ever get a chance to do that, I highly recommend that, because it's a lot of fun to be on a table and to feel. It gives you permission to really let go on the table, you know, to give in to the table. And you start to trust your teacher so they can help unwind, you know, if your psoas is really super tight and is causing everything to kind of be off, which happens, which is very common for athletes.
So moving on a bit, but we did touch upon this. What is constructive rest and how might it be utilized for dancers?
Well, that's a great question. So constructive rest, you can do it in supine, which is on your back, or you can do it in prone, which is on your belly. Most people do it on their back. We do it in our classes at the conservatory. We learn to do both. The thing that's so, what it is it when we go into constructive rest, we're giving ourselves the permission to, we go to the floor. If you're older and you know, going to the floor is not comfortable, or if you're dealing with an injury, or if your back is in a lot of pain, you can do it on your bed, but it's nice to have a really flat surface. The thing that's nice about constructive rest is that, you know, when you're down on the floor, you feel safe. So it may take a little bit of getting used to. So we're able to, if we're on our backs, we're able to allow everything to just kind of pour back into the floor and allow gravity to do its thing. So usually you do constructive rest with your teacher. If you're doing a group class, your teacher will guide you, or you can do it with a recording. And it's just the opportunity to allow everything to reset and reorganize. And again, it calms the nervous system down. So it helps to from there, when we have a, when we calm the nervous system down, from there we can heal and allow the body to reset and reorganize. You know, it's something that's interesting about the dancers is that it gets less so as we, as they become juniors and seniors after from taking the Alexander Technique class for a year or two semesters. When they lay down, they point their toes. I don't know, you may want to see if you do this, Anita. So they're because they've been working so hard, the toes are pointed even when they just lay down, even when they go to bed at night. And so the legs are engaged. You know, if you're pointing your toes when you lay down, you're shortening the back of your legs and your back. So when you go down for constructive rest, what that does, if you're still pointing your, if they're going forward, then they're pulling on the psoas. And so the psoas is being pulled away from the floor. And so what constructive rest, when you start to give over to the floor, the psoas will release back towards the floor and will reorganize. And then of course, you know, whoever your teacher is, hopefully that if they recognize that you're holding in the front of the your ankles and you're still pointing, you'll soften in those ankles and it'll free up the legs a little bit. But it's very interesting. So in the beginning with constructive rest, the dancers, they realize that they're still, you know, it takes them a while to get out of that habit, that pattern of pointing. They don't even realize they're doing it. They're like, oh my gosh, I'm pointing my toes. But eventually, so constructive rest is great for just allowing the body to reorganize and reset. And usually it's done, I mean, you can do it for 5 minutes if you're in a, if you don't have a lot of time in your day, 5 minutes can be great. Usually they recommend 20 minutes to really allow the body to settle down. There's a kind of pouring back into the floor.
How can a dancer find Alexander Technique classes or a teacher near them? Is there a way that you suggest looking for that?
Yes. So, I mean, you can always go online and look it up. There's two societies, two organizations. If you just type in Alexander Technique, they'll Alexander Technique International, ATI, will come up. And then there's what they call AMSET, American Society of Alexander Technique. That will pop up. And as you go to that website, it'll say find a teacher. So you can look up a teacher in your area if you like. You know, again, because of Zoom, there are a lot of teachers now that teach online, which is fantastic, which is great. So there's, I know the Balance Arts Center out of New York City, Anne Rodegar, she has an ongoing online class that she teaches that's a lot of fun. And there's quite a few teachers. Belinda Mello, she's out of New York City. So just go online and see, you know, if you can find somebody to work with in person, you know, when you feel comfortable and when it feels a little more safe, that's great. That's fantastic. But you can also learn a lot online.
That's awesome. That's so good to know.
So wrapping up with our final question, what would be your number one piece of advice for the Movement Toward Change dance community?
I would say my advice would be to learn to take care of yourself. Learn to take care of yourself. Because I feel like the more you learn to take care of yourself, then you're able to help others and you're able to, you know, go out into the world. But you, I just from my own experience or from what I've learned from being an Alexander Technique teacher, I've been teaching at the conservatory now for 10 years. I can't believe it. But learning to take care of myself and just learning to love and accept and honor yourself, you know, and honor your process. You are where you are, and that's where you need to be. You know, comparing yourself to other people, it just doesn't do you any good. So take care of you, honor yourself, and just accept who you are and that you are where you need to be for the moment. And yeah, that would be my advice.
If you have further questions for Shannon, you can reach her through email, which we will put in the show notes. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you for having me.